So how did you two love rats meet?
Oh, it's a fun story. I was working on this project tearing down a condemned bar called the Desert Rash. I went in to meet with the contractors, and Diana is sitting at the bar drinking a 7 and 7 and 7.
7 shots of Seagram's 7 in 7 minutes. It's Diana's morning drink.
Oh, that's right. It was very early in the morning. Well, this little spitfire finds out it's me who's closing down the bar. Next thing I know, she's got a knife to my face. I would have been scared if she hadn't been the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen in my life. So how did you and Eleanor become friends?
Well, let's just say that we lived in the same neighborhood.
Oh, what a fun way to say a normal thing, right?
TBTL!
Thank you so much for letting us rap. Don't hesitate. Feel free to clap.
What's your question?
How much milk do I have to drink to be big enough to be quarterback?
Drink as much milk as your little belly can hold.
Wait,
what? So what was the exact question?
I don't worry about it. I'll move on. It's all fine.
Be cool, get out there, and don't forget to be yourself.
All right, everybody. Hello and welcome to a Tuesday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Is it too early to get a fish sandwich?
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
I think this guy's sense of humor never developed past junior high school.
Best case scenario. Coming to you here on a Tuesday morning from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, a beautiful sunrise over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain. It is pink. It is blue. It is. There are some puffy clouds. It's just a beautiful morning here in Bellingham. Glad to have you with us for episode 2,815 in a collector series.
We have, let the fun begin.
We have all kinds of topics that we'd like to explore here on the Imaginary Radio with you. Remember a topic. An incident, an event that we covered pretty extensively on this show, I don't know, like a year or so back. It was called the Fire Festival. It was supposed to be this like real high-end luxury music festival on an island in like the Caribbean. And then
it was literally a major disaster.
It was a music festival that was the brainchild of a guy piloting a small aircraft along with Ja Rule, the rapper of Put It On Me fame. I feel like Ja Rule's job is to show up in various J-Lo songs and say, put it on me, maybe put it on you. It's kind of Ja Rule's niche. Anyway, he and Ja Rule were flying, and they ran out of gas, or they had to make an emergency landing on some desolate island, and then they decided, let's do a festival here. Well, it didn't go well. We talked about that part. Now there is Netflix has been working on a documentary about this. But then Hulu, they dropped their own documentary about Fire Festival like 4 or 5 days before Netflix could. I don't think the Netflix knew this was coming. They blindsided them. Anyway, we'll talk about that. Also, I've gone full condo on it now, which is different than going full commando. And I'm happy to report that
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
I'm going condo, not commando, here on a Tuesday morning. I talked about this Marie Kondo show, Tidying Up, yesterday, and I was a little dismissive of the advice. Well, I watched more episodes with Carrie last night.
That's my wife.
And really got to me, really got under my skin, and had me asking if things sparked joy at 11:30 at night as I wandered around the house. So we will revisit that topic as well, plus emails and V-mails. And we will say hello to this young guy, longest running Cobro of the show. He's the president of Rap Music, and he needs to see you right now. Believe it or not, he's a complete catch. He's known for his drawings of tall ships. He's Andrew.
I could have Scrooge McDucked into those things.
Walsh. And he joins us right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning. What could I have Scrooge McDucked into again? Do you remember what I was talking about?
I forget the specific thing, but what I remember at the time was thinking, Oh, that'd tear you up. That'd be real bad. Like, it was something.
Syringes?
It was something that was.
No,
yeah, it was.
Right.
It was something that was very pokey. That I was like, of all the things. And you know what's kind of funny that you said that was. That was my made up dumb story on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me last week. It would the real story was about people in Dubai doing something that's just for real rich people, which is in Dubai they have been covering, like, there's a stunt food trend of putting gold, like edible gold, but it's real actual gold, which
yeah.
I guess is fairly inert. I didn't know this. I haven't tried to eat a lot of gold in my life. But
eat that gold.
I learned that from some of my radio mentors. Anyway, so people are there's like a gold wrapped steak for hundreds of dollars. There's gold lattes, you know, you name it. They put this edible gold on it. It tastes terrible, by the way, or I should say it has no taste, but it just ruins the actual dining experience. But it's, of course, as they say, highly Instagrammable. That was the real story. They said to the other, they said to me and to Paula Poundstone, make up fake stories. Mine was about the trend in Dubai of people, of guys, doing the Scrooge McDuck challenge.
That's
which is where you liquidate all your assets. You get them converted into gold and treasures. You put them in a swimming pool and you dive in. Now, this is the funny part of that story was backstage. I was reading through the bluff with the host, Peter, to make sure it was he liked it. And Roxanne Roberts, the other panelist, overheard it. Roxanne, not known, I would say, and I feel comfortable saying this to her. I'm not talking any smack here. Roxanne is not maybe like, I would just say, comedy is not her strong suit, which is a funny thing to say considering it's a comedy show and she's one of the founding people on the show. But I read the bluff and she goes, oh, no. She goes, it would have to be paper money. It can't be gold doubloons. Because I had a joke about how he ended up in the hospital because he got a doubloon wedged in his eye socket. She goes, he'd get hurt if he dove into gold coins.
Wow. So did you spike it?
As in what? Change the script?
Did you kill the joke? Yeah.
No, but I looked at Roxanne with a look of like, do you not understand what is the most basic? I'm not saying it's a good spoof, but what is the most basic premise of comedy, which is, yeah, he would get hurt. That's kind of the joke. Like, she wanted me to make, and I made fun of her on stage for this, by the way. I don't think it made it into the show, but that's why I'm not S-talking my friend Roxanne. But she wanted me to make the thing that people were diving into less painful. I was like, yeah, then it wouldn't be a joke because they have to be diving into something that hurts them. So you took the joke to a whole new level yesterday with whatever it was, which may or may not have even ended up in the final version of our show. Who knows what gets cut out. But I will say you made a reference to something yesterday. Oh, actually, of course it got into the show because our friend, Lynn, could not have sent this.
I could have Scrooge McDucked into those things.
The fact that he was able to send that audio means it made it into the final broadcast.
I think I was talking about those little TV adapters. That's what I was talking about. Those little old, the things I used to need to use to get my rabbit ears to talk to my cable-ready TV.
The little horseshoe-shaped flanges of metal.
Yep.
I wouldn't want that catching the corner of my eye socket or something like that.
I gotta say, I guess spoiler alert for people who have DVR'd Wait, Don't Tell Me. Did the person get the right answer? I actually think that the gold doublooning it. I mean, usually I think you're a hack, but I actually think that's a pretty that's a pretty good one because I don't know. There are so many like experience based things now. You know, like axe throwing. It seems like I heard about that for the first time when I was in St. Paul not all that long ago. Now it seems like everywhere I turn, there's a new axe throwing bar or something. There's a place they were talking about in Cairo where it's just a place where you can go to smash things. They have all kinds of old things and all kinds of implements.
Yeah, stress outlet.
Which
place.
Sounds great. Although I think once I'm there, I'd be like, can everybody just leave? And turn out the lights and let me start smashing. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it would almost be too organized. Anyway, there are so many kind of immersive experiences like that. And this idea of, like, kind of swimming in money it has an appeal, I think, sort of. The idea of having so much opulence that you can just literally bathe yourself in it. So I could see somewhere. Did you say Dubai or something? That people are jumping into money? I could totally see that as a thing.
Yeah, thank you for honoring the possible realism of that made up story. It was set in Dubai, and it was not picked because. And now I am smack talking, but not in a way that Paula hasn't heard, Roxanne hasn't heard before. But of course, they picked Roxanne's story because she intentionally writes them in a way that they sound more or less like news stories.
Oh.
Like, so if you give, so she had the real story, which was about the eating gold. Paula made up a one about basically like you could rent peacocks in Dubai, kind of like the way you pick up one of those like bird scooters. They just have peacocks like chained up, and you just like you scan something, and then you just like walk your peacock to show how rich you are.
That's perfect.
The great part of the story was that peacocks apparently have a kind of a vertigo. So they throw up when they get north of the like fifth floor of a high rise, but Dubai is all high rises, so they just have peacocks vomiting in elevators all over Dubai.
Paula, that's pretty good.
Solid spoof, right?
That's a pretty good spoof.
So those are the made up ones. Mine and hers, they were not picked by the person. They picked the real. Oddly enough, and sorry for those of you who don't know the show that we're referring to, this is very boring, but The point is that they give us – one of us a real story and they have two of us make one up. And I would say I can count on one hand the number of times people have picked the phony story that I made up. There's something about the real story. It just has the ring of truth to it. Although if everyone's really doing what I think of as their job on the panel, it should be harder to figure out which is which because even if you have the real story, you should try to make it sound as ridiculous as possible. That is more funny. I will tell you this. Two appearances ago, I worked our friend Camaro Kev into the bluff. And you want to talk about worlds not overlapping. This was surprising to me. I tend to think of the reach of that show, Wait, Don't Tell Me, as being very sort of long. I made the protagonist of the story. The story was about gift giving gone awry, I think. And my story was about a dad in the Midwest who gets one of those Peloton bikes but doesn't realize that it's a stationary bike. So he kind of like modifies it to take it out on the road and then crashes it, and which is not a real thing. I made that up. And I made our friend Camaro Kev, a.k.a. Kevin Doddrell, I made him the protagonist. And then at the end of the story, he was trying to get the thing working again, and he was in the garage with his friends Pat and Dale. That's the name of his actual parents. So this happened to be the same the week of Camaro Kev's birthday. I threw this in, didn't hear a word. I don't do that to get like feedback from the person. Sometimes I'll put someone's name in just because I'm trying to think of a name, but it's usually just like a funny way of trying to, I don't know, just kind of put a subtle joke into the world that's basically confidential to like a friend or acquaintance of mine. I saw him a week or two later, and we talked for hours, and then somehow it came up, and I was like, oh, did you not hear about that? Your name and your parents' name were on this thing that 8 million people hear. And he's like, yeah, no, I didn't hear about it. And I was like, oh, that's because the Venn diagram of our worlds, of the people we – let's just put it this way. Dykstra didn't hear about it. Yeah. Dykstra was not able to tell Camaro Kev. Dykstra, who is building an outbuilding next to his house – full of speakers and recliners. I believe it's a converted garden shed, although garbage shed might be more apt. Dykstra likes to sit in his room or in his basement and play Post Malone really loud. And his wife doesn't like it because it's too noisy. So he decided to take one of those like kind of, I don't know, it's not a tiny house. It's like a garden shed. I think you can buy like maybe, I think he actually built this one, to be honest with you. I thought it was prefab, but as I think about it, I think he made this. He built this garden shed that he's now super sound insulated and put a bunch of speakers in and like two recliners. And he calls it, wait for it, the post office. Because it's for listening to the music of Post Malone.
I thought you just said Post Malone is like the type of music. And I know that
no,
he likes Post Malone.
No, literally the music of Post Malone. And he will just text us randomly and go, the post office is open.
Wow. Watch out, stamps.com. The post office just got a lot more attractive.
So that guy did not, it turns out, happen to catch Wait, Don't Tell Me on the given week and tell our friend Camaro Kev about the name drop.
Yeah, no, that doesn't surprise me. I think Kevin and Anita, like, no offense to you or me, you as a panelist and me as a fan, like, I think they're a little too cool for Wait,
We call you fanalists.
Yeah. would Lin Pham be a familist?
Yes, he absolutely
Anyway,
would.
Yeah, I think maybe. I'm not surprised. I'm actually, no joke, I'm a little more surprised that you're surprised, which I guess this conversation could just go on forever if we keep saying that back and forth.
Yeah, you're right. Here's what happens, and we've covered this territory a lot, so I'll try to keep it a little tighter than like normal, I guess. But most of the time, my default setting is to assume that the stuff that I work on is the people do not hear it and do not know about it. In particular, if it's this show, if it's Livewire, which we're very excited, Livewire's on in Colorado now. What up to our Tenverites? Catch us. You can cash us outside on Colorado Public Radio. When it's a thing like Livewire or TBTL or even maybe something I do on Sunday morning, I go into every conversation, if that's something that we're talking about, assuming I have to explain what it is, because of not ever wanting to. There's nothing worse than somebody being like, well, you probably know what I do. And you're like, I have no idea what you do. So I try not to do that. Wait is the only exception because it is so widely popular through no fault of my own, for the record. I think the reason I feel comfortable assuming that Wait, Don't Tell Me is huge is because I am the small – I'm a once every month and a half tiny cog in a wheel that is that show. So I think because I feel like I have – if it is popular, I get no credit for it. I feel comfortable leaning into the idea of the popularity of it. And like when I – like for instance, I worked the Stewbot into and I believe Piper into a bluff a year or two ago. And I swear to God, like 5 minutes after it aired, I was getting a text from Stu like, hey, thanks for the mention. So like that's the one area where I would just feel like Herb Weissbaum, the consumer guy at Como Radio who sits across from Kevin, would have heard it and told, you know what I mean? But of course, the one time I assume Kevin's going to hear about it is the time he doesn't hear about it.
Yeah. You mentioned my cats one time. I got calls from like Ohio, New Hampshire, well, text messages from people who heard it. Before, I didn't even really know. Well, maybe I think you might have told me you were going to in that case. So I didn't hear it, but I woke up one Saturday morning. Probably afternoon, and realized I had a bunch of text messages from people around who knew the names of my cats and noted that they were on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Your cats are bigger listeners to public radio than Camaro, Kevin, Anita.
Good for them.
Which, yeah, exactly. Let us take a quick break, and then we come back. I want to clarify some of my comments around the whole Marie Kondo thing. I think I sounded like I don't know. I
when you said what's wrong with being a white nationalist, it was taken out of context.
I'm just trying desperately to get back on a couple of those committees I've been removed from, and I'm hoping after the break I can do some damage control. You know what? On the subject of which, I went down a whole rabbit hole last night. No, okay. This is not a political – what I'm about to say is not political, and I'll say it after. After the break, because it could take another few minutes. I did like a few stories about Steve King back in the day when I used to cover Congress. And I went back and was trying to find some of them last night because I do not feel great about my coverage of him. I'll talk about it after the break. This is not really a political story, even though it sounds like it is. But we'll get into that, too, when we get back from this quick break. It's TBTL. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah. Hey. Candy paint with the white on top. Lambo doors with a woo-wop drop. If you busy plotting on what I got, kicking your door, it's what you thought. $100,000 on the tabletop, half price my whip, same price my watch. Got no jumper, but I ball a lot. So you're stony, I do what I want. Candy paint with the white on top. Lambo doors with a woo-wop drop. If you busy plotting on what
Can you imagine hearing this at about 40,000 decibels inside a converted garden shed?
I can if I were a terrorism suspect, sure. Actually, this is not. This is not.
No, it's not. Actually, not.
It's not
the
bad
worst,
at all.
Right?
No, no, not at all. As a matter of fact, I mean, I've always. I don't really know Post Malone at all. I know what he looks like. This isn't what I pictured. But although I think I've heard this before. Now that we're playing it, is this
you
Squeeze?
Have? Because there was a. Exactly. This. I was for a hot minute playing this in Teddy's. Like,
oh, okay.
I guess it would have been maybe towards the end of the summer or like in September or something. Mm. Kind of like Dykstra was like, had forced it upon me and Kevin a bunch. And then a couple songs had actually sort of wormed their way into my brain. And then the combination of being very drunk and oddly nostalgic for the Post Malone music had caused me to play this. So you might have heard it in my presence.
It's not. It's and, honestly, it's not bad. Do you know the name of the album it's off of? Because I did not know this.
Is it a called White Iverson, or is that just a song he does?
I'm not sure, but this album is called Beer Bongs and Bentleys, which I think is actually I had never heard of that, and that sounds like the perfect album name for him. It seems like that really does kind of cover the vibe.
Yeah, he's. I mean, I'm so far from understanding current pop culture that I'll just – it's pointless for me to even try and speculate. But, like, what I find weird is – he's widely embraced by just the criticism of him is that his music is it sounds like it's basically the kind of sanitized, easily digestible, largely for white people version of music that other people are making, which is not a new phenomenon in this country. But as far as music goes, that being said, he's so weird looking to me that I thought maybe he was legit the first time I saw him. Does that make any sense? Like, if you tell me about a guy who's taking, you know, music that's being made by like less well-known artists or SoundCloud artists, I guess Post Malone started out on SoundCloud. Don't at me. But like, then I would expect to see a picture of somebody looking, I don't know, kind of conventionally handsome and attractive, kind of in like how Elvis, you know, does his cover of Hound Dog, a Big Mama Thornton song, and then he's a big star. Well, because he looks like Elvis. Post Malone looks like the guy who wrote the song that someone more attractive and normal looking then got famous with.
Well, imagine what his songwriter looks like.
That's what I'm saying. I don't understand. Like, I just
you should
was like,
see
oh.
the other musician, as they say.
Exactly. Okay, quickly on the Steve King thing that I was mentioning before the break. You kind of made a passing joke about you know, this comments that this guy, for those who haven't been following the news, first of all, Mazel Tov. Yeah. I should really look into that. Second of all, he's a guy from Iowa. He's a congressperson, and he has for years said things that are just overtly racist and white supremacist to the point where he was doing an interview with the New York Times. And he basically said, why is white supremacist when someone says somebody is saying white supremacist things, why is that considered a negative?
Yeah.
Which is, you know, submitted without comment, I guess, is what I would say on that. But what that had me thinking of, Andrew, is the fact that, like, I did a story when I covered Congress about Steve King because he looked physically very similar to a different Congress member named Tom Tancredo, by the way. Oh, yeah. Also pretty lousy record on talking about immigration. And they looked so similar that when people in the press pool would often mistake who they were, like which one was which. And it didn't help that their politics were very closely aligned. And so I did a story about how they looked really similar, and it was a kind of a jokey story, and it was how they had switched name tags at the White House Christmas party. And like, it was just all kind of this, like, no part of the story really was about the fact that he was really a pretty terrible person in terms of his policies. And I kind of was like, oh man, did I just sort of whistle past the graveyard of Steve King? So I went back and I found that story. There was another story I did at one point about him building this fake wall on C-SPAN. Like, I couldn't find – that was the story I was really looking for. And I couldn't find it. It might have maybe been part of a larger story I did about immigration once. But it was like I feel bad because I just thought Steve – like, I think a lot of people felt this way about the current president. I just thought Steve King is such a nutcase that it's like he's no legitimate threat to the democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his thing was – one of his things used to be in the day that he would like, there's a thing called special orders, which is when everyone has basically left like DC, or at least left you know, the House of Representatives, you can get on TV if one of your friends will agree to allegedly like run this special orders session of Congress. You can be on C-SPAN talking for as long as you want. And Steve King used to, like, pretty regularly on, like, Fridays, get on there, and he would put this – he would literally construct this, like, middle school model of a wall he wanted to have built. And my – I think the point of my story, or when I mentioned it in my story, that was just basically how silly this thing was, and how he had an intern building it, and an intern had, like, used the wrong materials or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just all this kind of – I just seemed preposterous and jokey. So anyway – all of that to say, when he made his way through the news yesterday, again, well, yeah. I mean, you know, over the last few weeks, and everyone's, even the Republicans are like, yo, we got to get rid of this dude. Like, even the Republicans, little shame that they may have at this point, were like, yeah, no, too much, even for mm-hmm. us. So I see that, and then I'm like, oh, God, was I high-fiving Steve King back in the day?
More or at least, like, helping kind of normalize him, or...
Yeah,
I
treating him like
mean,
he's just like... he's a quirky old coot. As opposed to, like, a guy who, like, laid down the playbook for the current president and Hamburglar-in-chief, or whatever he called it today. You see his typo about hamburger?
Oh, no, I didn't. Oh, my God. No. Yeah, I you know, our friend Tierra sent me a stock photo of the president yesterday with, you know, the whole banquet full of fast food and somebody lighting candles. And I had no context for that. I think we had just gotten done with the show or something. So I didn't know what the hell was going on. I didn't even know if it was new or old or what. And then, like, as that story kind of emerged, I still haven't read about it. I only keep on seeing the photos of it. I don't know why we're even talking about this. It just makes me upset.
But it's so farcical.
What was the idea behind it? Is he just trolling? Like, why would you serve a bunch of athletes the worst food on earth?
I believe
is that part
by the
of
he
it?
Called he spelled it in on Twitter this morning. He was bragging about how great this event went, and he said that he got them hamburgers that he paid for. Okay. Hamburgers. That must be a Utica thing.
Yeah.
So I actually, this one doesn't make me as crazy to talk about because the stakes are very low, so to speak, mm-hmm. I guess you
yeah.
could say.
Uh-huh.
Which is that the Clemson football team that won the national championship was going to come visit the White House. It's very spotty which teams are now invited to the White House because most of them have athletes that are like, miss me with that, you know? But I guess, you know, college football, they don't have as much autonomy as the pros do, and they're from, you know, Clemson's from the South. Maybe they're a little their fan base is more open to the president's whatever. So he invites Clemson, but because it's a government shutdown, I think he's trying to do some optics. So his version of optics is he claims to have spent with his own money bought this giant spread of fast food. So it's just like McDonald's food, Wendy's food, probably burger, probably Bururay is in there. Just this massive, huge spread of fast food. And then he's just standing in front. And then there's a candle. Is it candle lit? It would be funny trolling if it wasn't from this guy. But so I think the idea of it being fast food was one, because that's what he likes to eat.
Yeah.
And two, I may have been playing with the idea of, like, where everyone's tightening their belts or something.
Hmm.
But it was, of course, it just made for some pretty great photo ops. My little joke, and this joke, I would give it a solid medium, and it's not, it's lower than a medium if you can't see the image of him. But him standing just surrounded by fast food in this otherwise fancy room, I said, want to feel old? This is Augustus Gloop now. Because he just looks like, what would happen to Augustus Gloop if he didn't fall in that river? It'd be like, oh, he'd be this guy surrounded by cold Filet-O-Fish. I mean, that was the other thing that... Even like Bill Oakley, who's one of the creators of The Simpsons and one of the writers on The Simpsons. I don't know if you technically call him a creator, but he was the head writer for a long time. Bill Oakley's whole thing is he loves fast food, unironically and unapologetically loves fast food. In fact, keeps a funny blog about it. And he weighed in and he was like, look, nobody loves this stuff more. I mean, he eats it all the time. Like, it's very weird to find somebody who's kind of in our club, and by our club I mean generally left-leaning, you know, I don't know, watches the shows we watch, reads more or less the magazines we read, etc. It's rare to find somebody like that. Like, Bill Oakley was one of the first people in Portlandia. Like, they hired him because he lives in Portland with his wife and family. When they started doing Portlandia, they hired him. And it's weird to have somebody in that world also just like, yeah, I eat at McDonald's like three times a day. Mm-hmm. Like, it's notable. And he got on Twitter and he was like, look, I'm cool with all this food, but the issue is this stuff is going to just congeal after 15 minutes. Like, there's no way the Clemson football team was getting to eat the food when it was at its most edible. And say what you want about fast food, that stuff is not good after a certain amount of time. And these poor bastards were all just being forced to eat like a cold quarter pounder with cheese or whatever.
And fillet of fish. That's what, I mean, when I saw the first picture that Tierra sent me, I was just like, my initial reaction was I don't even know what's going on in this photo, but I can tell you there's way too much fillet of fish going on in this photo.
It's not Friday. I doubt that there are that many observant Catholics on the Clemson football team.
And it ain't Lent, bro.
And who, like, I do not need a cold fillet. Actually, I you know what? The cold fillet of fish would be less problematic for me maybe than the cold hamburger
really?
Or whatever else was out there. But you know what's the worst?
I would eat a colder burger before a cold, like, you know, once warm. I'm not talking about sushi, but I'm talking about like a once warm fillet of fish then cooled down and coagulated. Mm-hmm. I would eat a burger in that state before a fish fillet.
See, now we have finally gotten to the TBTL angle on this story.
Right.
This is actually a very good question for our show, which is to me the fish feels, maybe because I'm kind of on my eating less red meat grind of late, but like the fish just feels like, how bad can the fish go once it's been cooked? But actually, you know what, fish can go real bad. And I'll tell you, the worst thing you could do would be to Neil Rausch it, which is to say to microwave the Filet-O-Fish sandwich somewhere in the Oval Office, the kitchen off the Oval Office, so as to warm up your fish. Microwaving fish at work, that, my friend, is a violation of the Geneva Convention. Let's do this real quick before I talk Kondo, as in Marie Kondo, and before we get into the top stories. Let me thank some donors of the day here.
Thank you, baby. Can I jump in here really quickly before you start thanking the donors? I got a voicemail yesterday from a listener who said, I know something is muffled. What happened during the break that your Thank You Baby song got muffled between then and now? The version that you play for some reason sort of sounds like it's being played through a wet towel. I'm not saying that to hurt your feelings. But would you consider playing the one I send you maybe after the show?
Why don't you send it to me right now? Let's do a side-by-side for the listeners.
Well, here,
So I'm playing this in the clear now.
Okay.
This is the wet towel version. I like it.
Okay, here's my...
DJ wet towel. Hold on, though. I want to play this in the clear so people can hear the... I'm going to start this over. Okay, that's wet towel version now.
Okay. Are you ready to hear mine?
Let's see here. Well, sure. I mean, I thought we were going to do a side-by-side where you send me the next
file. I can send it to you, but while that's being sent, let's take a listen to this.
Thank you, baby. Oh, yeah. I can hear that.
Yeah, it's just brighter, and I don't know what happened. So I did send you that one for the future. I'd been noticing that for a while, but I didn't want to... I don't know. I thought maybe you kind of... You know,
hold
part
on now,
of the
let's
TBTL... Okay, yeah.
I want to play the version you just sent me. Let's see if it's my computer, if it's my mixing board, if it's yet another audio cable, or if it's just that version of that song, okay?
Okay.
Yes. Already sounds better, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, a lot better.
Okay,
I wonder if that has to do with... Because the one I was playing was through Apple Music, and I wonder if Apple Music's audio standards are some... Because did you grab this through Spotify or something?
What? That blows my mind. Because I thought I grabbed this off of YouTube. Maybe it was Spotify. Maybe it was Spotify. I don't know. But I find it hard to believe that Apple Music sounds that muddy. I thought for sure you just grabbed a version off the web, which is why I was thinking, oh, maybe you think it's kind of charmingly TBTL-ish, kind of grungy and rough.
No, it's off of... It's Thank You Baby by the Shirelles off of 20 Greatest Hits, which I grabbed out of Apple Music.
I have a theory that
might be total bullshit.
But you found that in Apple Music, but then you recorded it into your own thing. I wonder if they have a digital rights management thing that knocks that somehow affects the quality of music so that you can't just steal it.
I love your theory. I love how your brain works, but that's not what happened because there's one flaw with your story, which is the idea that I would put in that much time on this project. It's not. I did not load it in. I just grabbed it because it's all integrated, right?
My iTunes, yeah.
Apple Music. So I downloaded it. It's on a playlist. And the reason I know that I didn't do any extra work is because I'm looking at a photo of the Shirelles. Like, it has all of the metadata and such with it. In other words,
I didn't
go snag this somewhere or somehow input it differently. This is as God made it, or I should say, as the gods of Apple made it. Or at least, I'm sorry, the version I was playing, the fuzzy version. So,
yeah,
anyway.
I am looking now. I don't use Apple Music, but I'm looking at it now, and I see that they do have something called the Wet Towel Remix. Is there any chance
you were
playing that one?
Yeah, that's exactly... Was I not supposed to play that one?
No, you can play whatever you want is my whole point.
DJ Wet Towel! Beep, 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 beep. All right, let's thank our donors of the day now that we've worked out this musical situation. Colleen Arnold of Hayward, California.
Hayward.
Kelly Carson of Orlando, Florida. Ginny Catania of Austin, Texas. Leah Chiarelli of Shoreline, Washington. What up, Leah? Leah, a fellow attendee of the Haller Lake Christian preschool that I went to.
And sister of my good friend.
And employee of Pacific Northwest Ballet, and also TBTL donor. Thanks, Leah. Cameron Little of Bellevue, Washington. Also, Cameron, thank you, my friend. Thank you for supporting content that sometimes has to play the thank you music 4 or 5 different times to figure out which the clear version is and which the wet towel version is. Thanks for supporting this content month in and month out with your donation. We would absolutely not be able to do the show without Cameron, Leah, Ginny, Kelly, and Colleen. Thank you for supporting TBTL. We really appreciate it. Listen to the fidelity.
So clear. So good. Thank you, baby. We should go back and redo the old donors from the previous shows. You cool with that? Punch it in?
Absolutely.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, I'll try to be quick with this because I spent a bunch of time yesterday on it. But I was talking about that Marie Kondo show, Tidying Up, and it's on Netflix. And I know you mentioned yesterday on the show, Andrew, you're not a big, like, quote unquote, reality TV person. It just doesn't spark joy for you, as they say a lot on the Marie Kondo show. But I think this one, I would say it's worth checking out. It's kind of like, Netflix seems to be a little bit more of a prestige thing in my experience. And like, it's like at one end of the spectrum of just like horribly stitched together, obviously fake reality show would be like a show that Carrie and I watch sometimes called Below Deck. Okay, it's ostensibly a show about a crew that work on a luxury yacht. But it's very obvious. Like, it's the lowest level of reality television. You can tell that they're manufacturing every plot line and every reaction from every person. Then on the higher end of the spectrum would be this Marie Kondo show. So it's technically reality, but it doesn't seem like it's super manipulated, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that like encourages you or not, but
I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, I should give it a shot at some point. But
I mean,
it
just
will,
as a professional
it'll be
obligation.
Like work. Yeah, exactly. It will be work for me. Oh, and not that it's a bad show, but it's just like, I don't know. I just don't. That is not what I do in my personal
right.
time.
Well, here's what you do, my friend. And again, I'm not trying to tell you how to live your life, but block out time during when you would be working. Just like watch it like yeah. during the workday. Like this is research. Not for TBTL. You do whatever you want. I'm talking about for Spotless. You don't know this, but the flowchart is weird. I'm actually the boss of Spotless.
Interesting. I didn't. Are you the executive producer?
I'm a assistant to the regional manager of your
Scott Aukerman
podcast.
Would say, where are you on the call sheet? That's what I want to do.
Your fine cleaning related podcast that you and Hannah Brooks Olson host. Anyway, so yesterday I was talking about this. I watched the first episode of the show and I was talking about how I thought that it really just came down to just get rid of stuff. Like that's – they kept talking about organizing as this, I thought, kind of a code word for clean. Clean. They kept saying like, I just can't stay organized. But I'm like, no, you're just not clean people, first of all. And second of all, there's all this – like she has this thing called like KonMari. Her theory of organizing is like a – it's probably trademarked called KonMari. And it breaks everything down into these categories, which I cannot wrap my mind around for the record. But to me, it's like all of the debating around or all of the kind of organizing theory, if you will, around what goes where could really be boiled down to just look around your house, 90% of the stuff you don't need in there. So that's what I said yesterday. But I think I was a little spacey yesterday for reasons I don't fully understand. So I don't know how much sense I was making on the show. I guess what I was really trying to say is I think we would probably all do this, and I'm not blowing anyone's mind with this, but I think we'd all do better to have a little bit less stuff. And I think for me, and this is very much taking a page out of your book, Andrew, I think – and I did get to this a little bit yesterday. For me, the big revelation really is just I don't need as much stuff to do different tasks. Like you talked about making rice in just a pot on the stove instead of a dedicated rice maker. And like I have for the longest time operated with this idea that like if before I do anything, I need to acquire all the stuff for the doing of the thing. And I actually like this – and what I'm about to say is really just basically the minimalist credo, I guess. But I just want to get down to having not so much stuff and figuring out how to do more things with less stuff. Like last night after I watched another episode of the Marie Kondo thing, I then, of course, went into the bedroom and there's an area above where in our closet where my clothes are hanging where I just have like clothes that I don't know what to do with. And I just pulled all of that stuff down at like 11 o'clock at night, which is the perfect time for cleaning.
Yeah.
And was just like, am I going to ever wear these shorts again from J. Crew that were in style 3 summers ago? And the answer is no. They're going to Goodwill. So I went through and organized all of that. And what I realized was – and then I went through and I tossed out a ton of like – this little personal but just like underwear that was completely fine. Like it was not threadbare. It had not been worn millions of times, but it was just underwear that I don't really wear that much. It's like backup underwear. I don't know if you have anything like that. But what I realized was – as I got rid of this stuff, the reason I had accumulated tons of socks and underwear was because I never wanted to be out of socks and underwear. And what I grew up in a family where like we didn't – and I know I'm always on about my hardscrabble childhood way too much. But I honestly didn't have a brand new pair of socks or underwear until I was in adulthood. And that's not because we were too poor to have it, by the way. It's just because it was not a priority in my family. My mom generally operated from the idea that like – I don't know. There's lots of almost free underwear to be had at rummage sales, and you wash it once in really hot water, and then your body doesn't know the difference. She's not wrong about that, but it was a revelation to me in my early adulthood that you could just go to the store and buy like many, many pairs of underwear for like not very much money. And so I think I always wanted to like have lots of that stuff around, but here's the thing. I'm not using most of it. It's taking up room. It means that my underwear drawer is like bursting. So I took out all the stuff I don't use and I was like, you know what this really means? I might have to do more laundry. Like I might just have – like if I had 10 pairs of underwear instead of 20, it would just mean I would probably have to do laundry on a more frequent basis. And environmental implications notwithstanding, that just means a little more work for me. Just like making rice in a pot just means a little more work for you. But that's maybe not the worst thing.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I have – I don't know if I have backup underwear. But I will say that, you know, my clothes are on a spectrum when it comes to socks and underwear. Obviously, like, I just recently went and bought a whole new thing of socks and underwear. And that's a great feeling for me. But I still, like – I have the brand new ones. I usually wear Argyle socks when possible for those who are playing Walsh bingo. you know, like the other day I told you, I went to a friend's house to play a game. It was game night. And I was like, I'm pretty sure this is a shoes on house, but it might not be a shoes on house. So I'm going to, you know, definitely wear my new pair. If I'm waking up in the morning and I know I'm not leaving the house, I'm doing TBTL and working from home all day, then I'm going to wear one of the older pair of socks I have that the elastic is starting to go on. And then one thing that, again, I stole this from Pesca, but I did on like our two trips where we had to pack very minimally, the hitchhiking trip and the RV trip, I would take my lowest end stuff on those trips and then discard it along the way, which led to you finding underwear in a hotel wastebasket that I believe made you slightly uncomfortable.
Well, yes.
Understandably. Hey, can I say one thing about the condo thing, though? Only
yes.
To be yesterday, you were the one who was being slightly I don't know, maybe perverse about her theory. By the way, you said organizing principles before. That would be a show. How about the next version of the show is, this isn't what I want to say, by the way. This is an aside. How about she gets a bunch of educators in a room and helps them organize, and it's called organizing principles.
Educational administrators who have
exactly.
clutter problems.
Organizing principles. All right.
Well, we got our
or
show
you
title.
Have a bunch I'll of, or you have a bunch of organizing principles. Like you have a bunch of principles of various shapes and sizes, and then you organize them all by height. All right. Here's what I want to say. I have not read Marie Kondo's book, but generally speaking, early on in life, I adopted kind of a similar theory that I planned on moving around a lot. I didn't want a bunch of stuff. I knew pretty early on, and I mean before I was an adult, that I did not want to live the life where I buy one house and stay in one place and accumulate stuff. I figured my life would be moving around, which it has been. And so because of that, I never grew too attached to things. I thought to myself, you know, there are so many things that I have been hanging on to. I was a big memento guy for a while. I had tattoos all over my body. Yeah. And it would be really hard to get rid of these things until I started getting rid of some things. And maybe I'm a young man now and I realized those things that I got rid of that were so hard to get rid of, I never went back and missed them. Never in my life was I like, damn, I wish I had that, yeah. You know, whatever. Except now in the past couple of years, there are a few things that I took that attitude towards that I regret not having anymore. So I also think that, like, well, Marie Kondo, which I haven't even watched her show, I understand this isn't for me, but everybody's got their own lines. I don't think that this idea that, you know, does it spark joy if not get rid of it? I mean, there, if you have enough room to keep, you know, a couple of extra things and it's not getting in your way and it's not giving you a bad feeling, then fine. I just think that line, like, I will tell you a couple of things I wish I had. I told you I used to bootleg Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me long before I knew you and when it was all and before you were on the show, when it was done via ISDNs instead
wow,
of in
you
front
bootlegged
of
a. That was when we
I
called
had,
it Wait, Wait, Don't Change the Station. When I worked at KUOW, we were like, this show is bad.
Oh, really? Oh.
Oh, yeah. We thought it was
I
terrible.
I liked it, but I was in New Hampshire running the ISD. Basically, they would have a bunch of – all the panelists
oh,
would be
so
in different
like
studios.
PJ O'Rourke or whoever
yes,
come out?
I was in New Hampshire, so one of the panelists was PJ O'Rourke. He was like, you know, once a month, maybe once every few weeks he'd be on the show. They would need somebody to kind of sit in there and babysit it and ride the levels and just generally engineer the show. And what I would always do is I would pop in a cassette tape, one of the really cheap station cassette tapes, and record it. And I would start recording from the moment everybody got in the studio. And there was so much banter before the show would begin and in between. And I loved it. And I had this case. Now, probably, ethically speaking, it's good that I got rid of that. You shouldn't be recording people, especially people of note. Well, I guess you shouldn't be recording anybody without them necessarily knowing it. But they all knew they were talking into microphones. They all knew that there were a million different stations involved here and that they weren't in a private setting. But I love the fact that I had the briefcase full of that. And now that I am getting back into my cassette tape culture, I kind of wish I had that. Or all of the This American Life that I used to tape. Again, this is pre-internet or nascent internet, and I would record This American Life on the same kind of very cheap little cassette tape. So I had a briefcase full of those. I had a camera that I had. It was my dad's camera. Do I say camera funny? And I gave this to a TBTL listener, so I hope he's not listening. And if so, I'm totally fine with it. But when we moved back from LA to Seattle, we had very, very little space, and we had been accumulating a little bit more stuff because we were renting bigger apartments. And I was frantic to shed as much stuff from my life as possible because I felt claustrophobic with stuff in my last place. And I was like, listen, this is my old film camera. I had a lot of good times with it, a lot of lenses. I will never use it again. You're only holding on to it for sentimentality. And so I gave it to a listener, which is fine. And again, I hope he's not listening now, and I hope he is enjoying it. But part of me is kind of like, now that I've moved again, if I had just held on to that thing for a year and a half, I have plenty of room for that camera now. You know what I mean? And that was a camera that I learned to take photos on. So I don't know. There are things that I do regret.
This person, sorry, but that this listener was just long conning you to get a camera. It started years ago listening to TBTL, became friends with you, got the camera, and now they're not listening. They're like, got it. Mission accomplished.
Well, listen. This was about at least 2 years ago that I gave him the camera. I've said a lot. I've tanked a lot of shows on TBTL since then. There's a very good chance that he can't take the show anymore. But anyway, I'm not saying that. All I want to say is that while I usually do live my life in get rid of it, you won't miss it, there are some things that you might actually miss. And so just like you have to look at your own surroundings and kind of figure out what works for you. I think hoarding is a really bad thing, and my instincts lean in the opposite direction of that. But it doesn't mean that everything is disposable.
And I'm not telling anybody else, nor is Marie Kondo, I don't think, telling anyone else how to live their life, like how much stuff is the right amount of stuff. Listener Jamie, who checks in on this very topic, said, I read her book a couple years ago. I haven't done the big purge, but I am gradually working through my house. I think two of her concepts are what make her great. One is focusing on the final space when your stuff is folded and in colored order and it fits your space. It's a huge incentive to keep it organized. I would totally agree with that. Like, I've gone through and organized a few rooms in the house here, and they're not Marie Kondo level of organized, but they're a lot more than they used to be. And once you get something kind of more or less set up, like we had a closet. I had a closet actually here. I'm looking at it right now in this room. And actually, I think you saw it once after it had been organized, and you had commented on how I had all my suits kind of laid out.
Oh, yeah, in your studio there.
Yeah, here in the studio.
Yeah, it's very organized.
The reason it got organized was because when I was trying to get on a cruise ship in L.A. and didn't have the proper paperwork and had to call you and Genevieve and interrupt your breakfast and have you go break into our friend Jessica's house to take a photo of my passport – the first call we made was to this young woman who we had hired to house sit for us. And I had sent her into that closet of doom to try to find, I don't know what I was trying to have her find, but some paperwork verifying that I am a human being who is allowed to get on cruise ships. And the sound in her voice as she opened the closet.
Oh, it was pre-organized.
Like, she had, pre-organized. She hadn't had the Marie Kondo. Like, Marie Kondo's very good at withholding judgment. Like, she's clearly learned that, like, the more effed up the room is, the more excited she should act. Like, she totally, like, because, of course, everyone's worried about being judged. And so, like I said, what she does that's really genius is she does not let on how jacked up this room is. Anyway, this person we had hired a house that had not done that kind of work, and so she was just like, where do I look for this? So anyway, that was enough to get me to organize that closet, and now that it's organized, I like it being organized, and I tend to keep it in much better shape. My point being, as Jamie is pointing out, that once you get stuff kind of put together, then you have a certain kind of momentum with it, and it's easier to keep it together.
Yeah,
what I was gonna say, and then Jamie also talks about her challenge is She said the thing that she likes that Marie Kondo acknowledges is our attachment to stuff. She said this isn't about an extra visor. Yesterday I had mentioned like a visor you got for doing like a lymphoma walk or something, being the kind of thing that you'll find around your house. And you'll be like, I might need a visor sometime. And it's like, really? Jamie says, it's not about an extra visor, but the shirt I was wearing when I saw my favorite band for the first time, a piece of china from my grandmother, the expensive dress I'm going to wear when I lose 5 pounds. Asking if it sparks joy and if I want it to be a part of my life moving forward really helps detach. Saying thank you to that item seems super awkward but made me feel better about parting with things. That's another thing she has you do, which sounds really hokey, but I totally see the value of it, is you literally thank this item for helping, for serving you, like shirt, shorts, visor, what have you. I can totally see the how that helps you release the thing. Like, because mm-hmm. there's something about throwing something out that has been good for us over the years and feeling like really bad or giving it to Goodwill. And it's like, no, to thank it, that kind of gratitude element is really smart. All I was trying to say yesterday that I didn't really say in a clear way is, for me, I've always been pretty good at getting rid of stuff. What I've been bad about is then acquiring the new version of that thing right after or even in mm-hmm. advance of it. And what I'm – my goal for the next – I don't know, whatever period of my life is to continue, and this is I'm only talking about for what works for me right now, is to have less stuff and to not replace every trip to Goodwill with a whole new set of the same stuff but the newer cooler version.
Yeah, right. No, I definitely see that. Yeah, and again, I don't know why I needed to go on that whole tear about missing things. Maybe that
No, that's useful. Useful information because it's easy for the pendulum to swing too far, and I am the king. I'm like Miley Cyrus in the Wrecking Ball video. I am so prone to like talk to me next week and I'll tell you that I own 3 shirts total.
Yeah, right.
Like and one shoe. Why one shoe? Because that's what Marie Kondo told me to do. No, like I am the king of swinging way too far into things, and I think it's a useful note to point out that things that are of sentimental value or have kind of a quirky place in our life are valuable, and the whole goal is not to get down to 0 things.
Yeah.
So I think that was good that you threw that in.
Although the reminder that as Jamie says, that dress that you know doesn't. That I'm going to fit in later. Like I have so many shirts like that that I know. Like, it's just hard. It's like it's less hard, I think, for me to give up maybe something that is sentimental value, but I realize is just sentimental. Okay, I can get rid of that, and I'll probably not think back to it again. But also, by the way, I do think that middle age has changed me a little bit on that. I think when I was in my 20s and 30s. Especially in my 20s, it was easier to throw away sentimental things because my life wasn't that long, and there is definitely something real. I'm not going through a crisis or anything, but I'm certainly enjoying, you know, doing things that I joke around about on the show, like going back and really listening to my old cassette tapes and remembering what it was like the first time I listened to them and everything. I mean, there's definitely part of the aging process that is driving my desire to do those things. I don't think I'm in a bad place with it. I think I actually have a relatively healthy attitude towards it, but it certainly has to do with the fact that I'm 42 now and not 22. Anyway, I can't remember exactly where I was going with that. So, just the shirts thing, the idea that I have these shirts that, you know, I'm as fat as I've, you know, I don't think that if you were to look at me from day to day, you think that I look that much different than I did a year ago or 2 years ago. But
yeah,
I know that I'm only
different.
Moving in one direction here. And I have shirts that certainly fit me a couple of years ago that don't anymore. And, you know, those are the hardest things for me to get rid of because it is certainly admitting something about myself. And I truly think that, like, well, this isn't me. I mean, I've literally thought this my entire life since I was probably 11 years old and buying size 40 pants. Like, that's not a joke, by the way. I was wearing size 40 pants when I was a child at some point. That's how heavy I was as a kid. And so I think part of me thinks like, well, this isn't really me. Eventually, I'm going to get my shit together, right? And I can wear an extra large shirt instead of a double X or whatever the hell
well,
it is.
Well, this is what I'm going to say on that. I just was talking about getting rid of everything. But I have had the experience, kind of like you're talking about with missing your cassette tapes. I have had the experience of my weight tends to go up and down by 10, 15 pounds, depending on how whatever disciplined I am / insecure I'm feeling. And I have actually gotten back into – like I've worn outfits that I – or shirts that I couldn't wear before or whatever. You know what I'm talking about? That's an extremely gratifying feeling. So don't – I wouldn't say – like don't totally dismiss the idea that you might be able to fit back into those things at some point and that that might actually feel really good to you.
The only time that's ever happened in my life where I've gone in that direction – well, I guess since I hit a growth spurt in high school was when I was way too stressed out to be happy in Los Angeles. I realized I lost a lot of weight then, but also wow. I wouldn't trade that period for me. Because there's this one photo of me wearing a shirt that I can't squeeze into anymore that's very flattering on me at that time. And I love that photo of me, and I'm like, wow, I was miserable during this time. But man, I fit into that shirt.
Wow, you actually hit that point where you're like, your emotional unhappiness actually tamped down your appetite.
Yes, which I didn't realize at the time, because honestly, when I was during that time of extreme stress for me, I have memories of like going and like shame eating at the Subway across the street from the radio station. I used to tell you those stories where I, you know, worked on a college campus. There are all these like beautiful people around me while I'm like just like destroying a meatball sandwich, like sitting like in the middle of a Subway, feeling like everybody is laughing at me, which nobody was, by the way. They just didn't see me. But yeah, looking back, I think that I did lose some weight there in L.A., not because of social pressure of L.A., but just because I was so stressed out. I think that it really did have an impact on my physique.
You know, the thing that I can't throw, will never throw out, and I guess this probably makes sense, particularly to these listeners. Any TBTL t-shirt. We've just had so many over the years and events where there have been t-shirts, you know, as part of it or like, you know, fundraisers, et cetera. And so I have, because like I'm not a big old, I used to be an old t-shirt saver, like shirts that were not specific to TBTL, just kind of like, maybe I'll want that. I've referenced this shirt before, but I used to have this t-shirt from a place called Chico's Pizza in Seaview, Washington. And it was kind of like the maybe one of the first, like, I guess you could call it ironic t-shirts I had. Like, it was the beginning of me being like, I'm being funny because I'm wearing a shirt from a pizza place in Seaview, Washington. And I live in Seattle, you know what I mean? Like, and yeah. It sounds like I'm being like dismissive of that and of people that do that. I'm not. I mean, that was a big thing for me, like a connection of like, oh, everyone else is wearing, you know, whatever kind of shirt that makes more sense. I'm wearing a shirt that doesn't make a lot of sense, and that's where my creativity is shining through. So I used to like have lots of shirts like that and things, and then over the years as I would move, I would look at a shirt. Like I used to have a Trachtenberg Family Slideshow Player shirt, the people that I did that little documentary about. I moved that shirt to like four or five different houses because there was just something about old t-shirts. But then I realized at some point, I'm probably not going to ever wear those. Like they have better t-shirt technology now. There are things that are more flattering to me. And, you know, I mostly just wear darker colored shirts now because I find it more flattering. So anyway, I'm good at throwing out old clothes, except old TBTL related t-shirts. Mm-hmm. Those, I've got a stack of them. And they're moth-eaten, and I will never wear them. But it's like, I don't know why. They're just – I can't get rid of them. I got to hold on to them because they are like a legacy of this thing, which, you know.
Yeah.
I guess
and
I'm happy.
And they're one of a kind. They're irreplaceable.
They really – in some cases, only one was mailed out, and it was to me. Yeah. I have it.
Hey, by the way, on that, really quickly, not to derail us, but where's my poster?
You'll get tomorrow's poster in 2 weeks.
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Should we – I know we didn't have time to talk about Firefest. Maybe we can do that on tomorrow's edition of the show. In the meantime, do we have some emails and V-mails that we need to get to, or should we just? I've got a song to go out on. Should we do our
fire it up the emails, fire them up,
fire oh fire them. Festival the emails. Okay,
that's got right.
It. I dig.
Don't play the muddy version. Though.
Yeah, with the email,
the wet towel version.
Oh, that's female. Right.
Oh man, it's not from a female.
It's the email mud crutch edition. That doesn't even make sense.
I was going to say Muddy Waters. All right. How about this voicemail that I got from somebody? They said they had an Andrew moment. And whenever I hear that at the beginning of a voicemail, it's always, you know, I definitely am sticking around to hear what they say.
Hey, dummies. I'm currently at work, and I just had kind of an Andrew moment in the restroom. I kind of had a long, tough day, and I was at the urinal, and the bathroom was empty. And as I was going, I kind of put my hands on top of my head, and closed my eyes, and looked up and went, just, you know, getting the stress out of the day. And when I opened my eyes back up, there was a gentleman standing at the urinal directly next to me. So that was awkward. I, instead of saying anything, I just kind of acted like that was normal, like everybody does that when they do what I was doing. Power out.
Wow.
Oh, man. Yeah, I, you know, he went, not to get graphic, but both hands on top of his head. So
power
definitely
move.
A man who is not afraid of danger.
No, that's a power move.
Yeah, it's a very big power move. But anyway, yeah, so I guess that's Andrew moment.
Can I say,
think you're alone in a bathroom and it turns out you're not.
I think that maybe all the Marie Kondo has gone to my head, and now I think I am somebody who should dispense life advice on how to feel better. But this just sounds like I'm joking when I say this. I'm not. I remember when I used to work, particularly when I worked at KUOW back in the day, and I would feel really stressed out sometimes, like just anxiety that I couldn't place. And I would realize, it'd be like 2-3 in the afternoon, and I would realize, oh, I have to pee so bad right now. I've been holding it in, like out of stress, like thinking I don't have 25 seconds to go to the bathroom right now. But it was so it was so pushed down in my consciousness that I didn't even know I was doing it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd be like, I would actually stand up, I'd walk to the restroom, I would go to the bathroom, and I would just be like, oh, that's what it was. I'm not even anxious. I just had to pee so bad.
It's like an instant vacation.
Yes. And I will tell you, we can talk about this on tomorrow's edition of the show, which we'll be recording from your house, right before my trip to Atlanta. Speaking of Andrew, going to the bathroom, and particularly going number one, I think I may be going through a change, a life change. I may have to become a window seat guy, because the last time I flew home from Chicago to Bellingham by
way
of Seattle.
Window? I thought you were a window seat guy.
Did I say window? I mean,
yeah,
I might
mean
be
aisle
an aisle
seat,
seat guy.
Okay,
I might
yeah.
be an aisle seat guy now. My trip was miserable. I had to pee so bad the whole trip, and I kept doing that, like, how much longer do I need to hold this until I can ask the people next to me again if I can use the restroom? And I kept making deals with myself, and I kept losing at deals, and I didn't want to make any deals anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of my favorite things in the world to do is stare out the window of the airplane and listen to my music and think deep thoughts. But I don't know if I can do that anymore, because I'm now a person who needs to go to the bathroom 2 or 3 times on a 3-hour flight, a 4-hour flight, and it was awkward. I felt terrible. I was unhappy the whole flight. It sparked the opposite of joy, because I just was trying to hold it long enough to kind of non-awkwardly. And it didn't – I mean, it's not there. I don't want to blame the victim, but I also had 2 guys next to me that had like 11 items plugged into the seat in front of them. So it was extra.
Yeah.
Like, it was an extra big ask, because they all had like iPads going and this, that, and the other. So they had to really, really detach a lot of stuff for me to go past them.
Right, right. Did you see that thing? I got to say, though, speaking of the sparking joy conversation, did you see the Twitter meme going around? I don't know who to credit it to, but it's like it sets the scene where Marie Kondo is holding some bedraggled guy in front of a crowd and says, "Does he spark joy?" And the crowd says no, and she throws him into a pit.
Nice.
But speaking of going to the bathroom, let's just. I mean, you know, this started as a podcast for the younger generation, and now we are solidly a middle-aged podcast. So let's just talk about it. Have you been in the situation where you have to go to the bathroom so bad, and maybe it's one of those things where you're even holding it in because you don't want to, you know, make other people move to let you out of the aisle and all this stuff, and then you're like, finally, okay, I can go, and then you're like, wow, those weren't emergency levels. What's going on with me? Am I admitting prostate problems on the show? Because I think I'm fine. I just think with age, like at times, I don't have the same kind of tolerance.
I got 95 prostates, but a problem ain't one. How does that song go again?
I don't know.
No, not yet. Although I do think my prostate is enlarging, and this is part of the issue. Yeah, get hip, youth culture. This is what cutting edge podcasting sounds.
That's right.
This is what I'm saying. I don't know if it has to do with the vegetarian lifestyle or eating more veggies, which have a lot of water in them, or drinking a lot of water, or maybe the alcohol was helping hold it all in. Or I think I'm eating less processed food, which I think it means I'm eating less salt without meaning to. By the way, funny story. My weight has, if anything, gone slightly up since I've been doing this. So who knows? None of this is leading me to, I think, appear more svelte, for what that's worth. But I, not to be gross, but let me just put it this way. I'm peeing a healthy amount. Like when I got into the bathroom of the airplane, I peed for a long time. It wasn't like a false alarm. It was like, why? It must have to do with this change in my diet, because it's very much tracked with that. I must be eating things that have more water content, or something's happening where. But then, here's my version of that problem is, then I'm staying in the bathroom extra long because I think maybe there's another, maybe there's a little more gas in the tank.
Round two?
And, yeah, because my thought is, if I can get out every bit of this, then maybe I can just go the rest of the flight without needing to get up again. So like, okay, now I've already you know, put these people out that are in my row.
Yeah.
I'm back here. I've waited for the bathroom. I've done that bizarre tango with all the people in the aisle. I mean, we have no established rules around that. Like, I go butt to the people so that I'm not rubbing the front of me on the front of them. I think that's a minimum. But then the people in the seat in the aisle are getting the front of me. Nobody wins. Anyway, I'm in the bathroom and now I've gone through this whole thing and I'm like, I'll be gosh darned if I'm not going to get out every little bit of urine I can here. If I'm not going to mictrate to the maximum here. That's a decent show title.
Mictrate to the max. At Turtle Beach, dude. We had a place called Turtle Beach growing up.
I'm just thinking, if I wait another 5 minutes, is there going to be another round of needing to go to the bathroom? Because what happened to me at least one of the times was I went, was like, okay. Then I went, got all back in, got ensconced in my seat again. These dudes replugged in all of their devices. And then I was like, I can feel it building again. Like, just the beginning. Like, it's a one. I can feel it starting, though. Like, I just sat down and it's back at a one. And by the time it's at a 30, I'm gonna have to just like be like, sorry, guys. The other thing I reminded myself was, and this is useful, our bodies
are a wonderland.
They really are. Our bodies are, they tell us that we have to pee before we really have to pee real bad. And they're making us think it's worse than it is. We can hold it longer than we think we can.
That's more, I think more, that's what I'm getting at. And I'm sorry, I kind of really pushed us in a gross direction here. But I actually think it is more mental for me. I think that I have those experiences I'm telling you about more when I find myself in a situation where I think, oh gosh, I hope I don't have to pee. And then, of course, what are you thinking about? Peeing, so.
Yeah, I know. I was doing every kind of mental trick in the book with myself at that point. Just kind of like, again, creating these goals, like just go 10 more minutes and then see. Just go 10 more minutes. And then also just being like, you don't really even have to pee right now. Your mind is playing tricks. Your bladder is playing tricks on you, et cetera, et cetera. Well, so that was most of my
Turns out you were just punching the concrete.
That was most of my content for tomorrow's show. So I guess we'll have to find something new between now and then. I have a – let's see. I wrote down a possible show title. Did you write down any?
I wrote down a few, none of which I think are slam dunks or 360 pointers. We got Full Condo, Organizing Principles, or Almost Free Underwear.
I wrote down – oh, yeah. I wrote down Organizing Principles. That's the one I like. But you got to spell principle like a principal of a school. Which is
P-A-L-S, I believe, right? Because the principal is your pal.
Yes, that's also what they taught us at Daniel Bagley.
That's how I remember it, too.
Till this day. I will remember right and left because of the house that was on the right where a nice lady lived. She used to give us bags of cherries from her tree when I was a kid at living by Northgate. And the left, they were kind of scary. Their house had a big cedar tree that was kept it really dark and shady, and their house just seemed kind of weird and gross to me. It did not spark joy. Mm-hmm. So till the day I die, right is sunny and shiny with cherries, and left is with like people are smoking inside that house. That's left to me. And principal, the principal's my pal.
Yeah, and dessert has two S's because you want more of it. Desert.
I didn't know that.
I think.
I honestly did.
God, I hope I'm right about that. I'm pretty sure dessert, spelled with two S's, desert is one S. You can remember that because dessert, you want more of it. More S's.
Indeed.
Okay, I got a song you want to go out with, I think. I'll play it from here.
Another one from
what, is it?
What I'm calling the Addy Collection.
Mm-hmm.
It's just from some Spotify list that I have now access to that my daughter made. It's the guy is named Sam Evian. I think it's E-V-I-A-N.
Okay.
And the song is I-D-G-A-F, as in I don't give.
Give a friend.
I don't give a friend. That's the song that I thought we could go out with today. There's not any hidden message to that. I just was listening to it earlier. I thought this is a good song. So let's do that, and let's call that our Tuesday edition of the show. We'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. Go Mariners, go Browns, go eat a bagel. The song goes out to all the Freddy Kitchens of the world. I'm trying to work Freddy Kitchens into things now.
I like it.
And keep everything double great, people. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.